tonight we're going to talk about the Megillah. I was told to speak about Purim, as Purim's coming up exactly 2 weeks from today, actually from last night. And the question that I want to discuss today is Esther and Mordechai's role reversal. Who is the hero of Purim? So what does it mean, Esther and Mordechai's role reversal? So I want to introduce the question by talking about Rav Lichtenstein. So Rav Lichtenstein was the Rosh Yeshiva of Har Etzion in Eretz Yisrael, and he has a bunch of Sfarim, but one of the Sfarim that some of his Talmidim wrote up was By His Light. By His Light is written by one of his students, and it's of some of the talks that he gave in the yeshiva. So one of his most famous talks that he gave in the book is about Esther. About who was Esther, and we're going to be quoting a lot from Rav Lichtenstein tonight, and we're going to be quoting a lot from Rav Soloveitchik tonight. So the way he frames the question, I think it's a good place to start, in source number one on page number one. Is it the story of Esther alone? Surely it is the story of an entire nation, dispersed throughout Ahasuerus' 127 provinces, faced with the threat of genocide. The story also involves other main characters, such as Mordechai. Nevertheless, throughout history, this book has been known as not as Megillas Yehudim, nor even Megillas Mordechai, but rather as Megillas Esther. We refer to the book as Megillas Esther. And Rav Lichtenstein's question is, why? Why are we calling this Megillas Esther? It's a story of how the Jews were supposed to be annihilated and they were saved. It's a story of how Mordechai was able to save the Jews. And obviously Esther is a crucial and integral part of it. But what is the focus on Esther? That's question number one that I want to introduce with. But question number two, which is obviously a very connected question, is who is the protagonist? Who is the main hero of the Megillah? Who's the main character in the Megillah? So it's very easy to say, you look at the name of the Megillah, it's Esther, right? Esther is the main character of the Megillah. However, we're going to see that towards the beginning of the Megillah, it does not sound like that. Esther does not seem to be the focus of the Megillah. So what we're going to talk about tonight is really Mordechai 1 and Mordechai 2. Esther 1 and Esther 2. And we're going to talk about the two big Jewish characters and how their stories seem to go in opposite paths. So we're going to try and track their development across the Megillah. Obviously, that's a lot to do because they are the two most crucial, integral characters to the story. But we're going to try to just give a portrait of how Mordechai changes over the course of the Megillah and how Esther changes over the course of the Megillah. And hopefully through that, we'll be able to understand why is this Megillah called Esther and why is she really going to be the one who's considered the main hero. So let's start with Mordechai. So we're on page one in the first section. We're going to start with Mordechai, then go through Esther's development, understand Esther, and then get back to Mordechai. That is going to be the structure of this year. So we're finally introduced to them in Perek Beis after the whole description of the party, etc. And we're told, Pasuk, source number two, Pasuk Hey, Ish Yehudi Haya B'Shushan Habira, there's a Jewish man, not a Jewish woman, a Jewish man, Ushmo Mordechai Ben Yar, Ben Shimi, Ben Kish, Ish Mini. So we're introduced first to Mordechai, not Esther, and we get his whole lineage, Ben Yar, Ben Shimi, Ben Kish, and then he's Ish Mini. Fine, we could talk about the first pasuk for a while, but we're not going to. Asher Haglam Yerushalayim, he was exiled from Yerushalayim, Im Hagola, Asher Haglasa, Im Yechanya, Melech Yehuda, Asher Hegla, Nebuchadnezzar, Melech Bavel. And we get this whole background story for Mordechai, and how he was exiled from Yerushalayim with Yechanya, Melech Yehuda, and he had to come here that Nebuchadnezzar exiles. And then, Derech Agav, thrown in afterwards, is Vayihi Omein is Hadassa, he Esther Bas Dodo. And he raised Hadassa, who is Esther, the daughter of his uncle. He Ein La'av Ve'im, because she had no parents. V'hanara Yifas Torah V'Torah Tovas Mara. The only description we get about Esther, she's pretty and she's beautiful. Uvimos Avi Avima, and when her parents died, Lekacha Mordechai Lolavas. So how are we first introduced to Esther, right? She's her parents are dead, and she's really Yifas Torah and Yifas Mara. But the Pasuk seems to be focusing on Mordechai. We get a backstory about Mordechai. The focus is that Mordechai takes Esther as a daughter, not that Esther's parent was Mordechai. Mordechai raises Esther. So the impression that the first few psukim are giving us is who is the protagonist, who is the main hero of our story? It seems to be Mordechai. And if we look towards the end of the parak in Parak Beis, in source number three, Ein Esther Magedes Molata Vesama. So we're ready at the point where Esther has become the queen through the whole beauty contest. And Esther does not tell her birthplace and her nation. Why? Kasher tziva aleha Mordechai. Like Mordechai commanded her. We see that Mordechai is the one who is calling the shots. Mordechai says, don't say where you're from. Don't say your people. Esther says, how high? Right? How high should I jump? What am I going to do? The es maimer Mordechai, Esther asa. If you didn't get the memo, everything that Mordechai says, Esther is going to do. Kasher haisa v'amna ito. Even though she wasn't living in his house anymore, she's living in Ahasuerus, man, and the queen of 127 provinces, she has to like call up, like, what am I supposed to have for dinner? Like, that's the impression that it seems, that everything that Mordechai is saying, Esther is doing. And the Rav picks up on this in source number 4. The Rav didn't write the Sefer of Days of Deliverance. It's written by some of his Talmidim based on manuscripts and lectures that he gave in different places. I think this one was actually a memorial lecture for his wife. So it's called Days of Deliverance. That's the one it's Meotzer HaRav. It's put out for Hanukkah and Purim. So this one is obviously on one of the Purim pieces. So source number 4. That Mordechai's task had been to watch over Esther and to inspire and influence her. He had been Esther's teacher for many years. He had raised her. Now he became once again a teacher, a prophet, the still small voice that comes from within, exhorting, preaching, instructing, and inspiring. The voice of God addressed itself through Mordechai. He was bold, aggressive, and initiated action. Who's the leader in Perek Beis in the Megillah? It is Mordechai. Mordechai is the one who's taking action. Mordechai is the one who's calling the shots. And Esther does everything that we do. That is Mordechai 1. So I have to ask you right now, who's our protagonist? Who's the main hero so far?
Mordechai.
It's Mordechai. It seems to be Mordechai. And if we look at our picture of Esther, if we go now to page number 2, and now we're going to talk about Esther 1. We just discussed Mordechai 1. So now let's talk about Esther 1. Obviously, it's going to be related to a lot of the sources. Everything that we're introduced to as Esther, as we mentioned before, was that she's Mordechai, raised by Mordechai, and she has no parents. And only description that we have of her is that she's beautiful, nothing else. We get no other description, and that she's subservient to Mordechai. And if you look at the rest of Perek Beis, everything about Esther seems to be, if I have to use one word, which Rav Lichtenstein picks up on a lot, is passive. Everything that Esther does is passive, because she doesn't actually have any initiative. She's just someone who is passive. So if we look, for example, in source number 5, the key word, Vahi b'shama dvar ha-melech v'daso, v'ikaveitz na'aros rabos el shushan abira el yadai gai, v'ati lakach Esther al beis ha-melech. Esther is taken to the house of the king. Esther is taken. Okay, if we look at the Rav Lichtenstein, who is the Esther who appears on the scene in the second chapter? A beautiful young woman, but one who is powerless and completely lacking in independence of thought or action. She is under Mordechai's patronage. She treats her like a daughter. Even if we adopt the opinion that she was his wife, we are clearly dealing with a woman who lives completely under her husband's rule. And if we look similarly throughout the rest of Perek Beis, that is the impression that we got. So if we, it's not just Mordechai who Esther is passive towards. If you look in Pasuk Tesvav, in source number 7 in Perek Beis, Uvahagia tor Esther bas Avichail dod Mordechai. So it becomes Esther's turn, you know, to in the beauty contest. Asher lokach lo levas. We have to get another that she was taken to Mordechai as his daughter. Again, hammering it down in case it's not clear. This is someone who's passive and who's really following in her in Mordechai's lead. Lavo al hamelech. Lo viksha davar ki imes asher yomar hey guys sris hamelach shomer hanashim. She didn't request any of the makeup, any of the hair treatments, none of those. She wasn't going on Instagram trying to figure out what she should do. Just whatever you tell me, hey guy, that is what I want. Whatever hey guy says, that is who I'm going to do, because she's just going to listen to hey guy in order to come when it comes to beautifying herself. She's not going to be someone who displays initiative. She's not going to be someone who is going to be active. Rather, she's going to be passive. And similarly, in the next pasuk to Zion, finally vati lakach Esther el hamelach Achashverosh el beis malchuso. Esther is finally taken and chosen to be the queen. Not something she does. She is taken. She is chosen. Similarly, in pasuk 8, so it could be that she didn't go willingly, and that was a good thing.
She didn't want to go because of this. You know,
exactly. Yeah.
Wait, so say
the Gemara says Esther did not.
It might be turned
out. The women really wanted to become the queen, right?
Right.
She was not interested at all. She had to be trained in Hebrew.
Correct. Gemara Megillah says that. Yeah.
I mean, she had to. She was forced. She was taken really against her will to the palace.
Right. But even being someone who's taken against her will, even if she might have been doing the right thing out of a queasiness for going to the, towards the king and everything that he represents, still it's someone, it's something that's happening to her. But definitely in line with Chazal. So similarly in Perek 8, which is a pasuk, source number 8, which was the pasuk we read before, Esther is described everything that Mordechai tells me I'm going to do. He tells me not to tell my nation, I'm not going to tell my nation. He tells me not to tell my birthplace, I won't do that. It's like I'm living in my father's house, even though I'm in the queen, I'm in the palace. And Esther is someone who is just, seems to be passive to Mordechai. And that is the impression that you get from our introduction to Perek Beis. So Perek Beis, Mordechai 1, is active, bold, courageous, someone who's clearly taking the lead role. And Esther, on the other hand, seems to be someone who's passive. We barely know anything about her, and she's just following everything Mordechai says. However, towards the end of the Megillah, what we're going to call Esther 2, you get the exact opposite impression. Esther seems to do a complete 180. She can completely a transformational process and become someone who we don't even recognize. So Rav Lichtenstein points out in source number 9, the bottom of page 2, a glance further on reveals how this innocent maiden suddenly displays initiative that we never would have expected of her. She takes on Ahasuerus and Haman at their own game. She displays cunning, leading them both by the nose. She leads Haman into a trap, simultaneously arousing the anger of desire of Ahasuerus. Together with her personal initiative, her inner spiritual, national, and moral identities also come to full expression. From here onwards, Esther not only displays initiative in the sphere of political manipulation, but brimming with self-confidence, she faces up to Haman. She takes him on directly at the party. Here, Esther takes her place as a worthy member of the royalty, a leader. Her leadership is so outstanding towards the end of the Megillah that to some degree it overshadows that of Mordechai. So we're going to see right now is that Esther, throughout the whole story, she's willing to take to come in front of Ahasuerus, and she's willing to try and create this party and to accuse Haman in front of the two most powerful people in the most powerful empire in the world. And she's going to take other initiatives, as we're about to see in a second. If you look, for example, throughout the whole story, after Esther comes to accuses Haman, who's taking the lead role? Esther seems to be taking the lead role. She's, yeah.
Would you think that the turning point is at the end of the Perek Daled?
We're going to get there.
Oh, sorry.
We're going to get there. But we're going to ask, we're going to first show the evidence that there's a change that happens, and then we're going to ask when. But we're going to look exactly in Perek Daled. That's exactly what Rav Lichtenstein points to, but we'll get there in a second. But who's the one who pleads on their behalf? It's constantly Esther. Again, I gave you an example in source number 10, Perek Tes Pasuk Yud Gimel, that Esther's the one that, oh, it's okay, we have another day, let Shushan keep fighting, and Saras Bnei Haman, we should hang. And similarly, in Perek Tes Pasuk Chaf Tes, who's the one who writes everything down? V'atichtov Esther Hamalka Bas Avichayo Mordechai Yehudi, it's called Tokef, L'kai Mesi Garas HaPurim Hazo Sheinis. That Esther, Mordechai joins in, but who's the one who's doing taking the most initiative? It is Esther. Esther seems to be the one who's taking the most initiative. And similarly, in source number 12, Perek Tes Pasuk Lamed Beis, Umaymer Esther Kiyem Divrei HaPurim Ha'ila V'Nichtav B'Sefer. Who's the one who made sure that the Megillah got written down and that we were going to have Purim for generations? Maymer Esther. Esther is the one, not Mordechai. Maymer Esther. Esther is the one who ensures that Purim is going to be celebrated, as the Gemara in Megillah on Daf Zayin says, Shocha lahem Esther lechacham kvuni ledoros. Establish me for generations. I want to be the one to ensure that the Megillah and the story of Purim is something which is going to last for generations. And throughout Perek Tes, we have Esther pleading on the Jews' behalf. And we have Esther writing down the Megillah. Esther sending a message to the Chachamim to make sure we eternalize the story of Purim and never forget it. And it's as if a completely different person from the person that we saw in Perek Beis. Esther in Perek Tes, Esther 2, is active. She's bold. She's courageous. She's taking initiative. And the question is, how? How does such a transformation, how does such a metamorphosis take place?
Do we know the time frame? Do we know the time frame?
Of how long the whole thing took?
Yeah. From the time she becomes queen till...
Right, so she takes... It's about a few years. Yeah. It is a few years. It's like, I believe it's the third year of Ahasuerus, which is the first party. The
first party, she and Esther Vashti was killed.
Right, and then...
She became Esther, became queen in the
seventh year, right? And then
the latter, he's in the 12th year.
In the 12th year. So it was like 5 years later. So it could be that over the 5 years she matured. That's very possible. But Rav Lichtenstein is going to have a similar approach to what we were saying before. But first, Rav Lichtenstein just highlights a question in source number 14. Once upon a time, whatever Mordechai said Esther would do, he was the one pulling the strings. Suddenly, Mordechai's own achievements come only in the wake of Esther's initiative. How does Mordechai come to possess Haman's home? Through Esther, who writes the Megillah. While Mordechai is still equivocating, Queen Esther, daughter of Avichayo, wrote, and only afterwards did Mordechai join her. Now it is Esther who is prepared not only to stand before Ahasuerus, but also to send a letter to the sages and demand, write me down, remember for all generations. And Rav Lichtenstein concludes, source number 14 on page number 3 in the bottom, is this really the same innocent maiden who did what Mordechai told her? And whatever she was told by Haggai, the king's officer appointed over the woman? The woman from Perek Beis, is this the same woman who we saw in Perek Tes? So the question is, how did Esther change? We know that a change happened from Esther 1 of Perek Beis to Esther 2. In Perek Beis, Esther seems passive. In Perek Tes, Esther's taking the initiative and active. So how did a transformation like that happen? So Rav Lichtenstein points to Perek Dalet. He says, you want to understand Esther? You want to understand how her character changed? You have to look at Perek Dalet in the Megillah, where that's where the story starts to change. What happens in the beginning, towards the end of Perek Gimel? Perek Gimel is that Ahasuerus, Haman, they make the deal to wipe out the Jews, and Perek Dalet starts off with the description of how all of Shushan is mourning. Mordechai gets into sackcloth, gets into all his mourning clothes, and goes right in the middle of the town and says, you know, starts mourning and really is yells out a great cry. And the question is, what happens with Esther? Esther doesn't seem to do much. So the way the Lichtenstein describes it, Esther, she's the queen who indeed has the power to avert the evil decree, who lives in the royal palace, who can pull the necessary strings, does nothing. We don't hear a reaction from her. Again, there's a whole question in Megillah, did Esther know before Mordechai told her? But Mordechai's about to tell her in Pasuk Dalet, and we're going to see Mordechai's going to tell her, and still nothing seems to happen, which we're about to talk about. She thinks to herself, the decree has been issued. What can I do? I'm a young and simple girl. I can't move mountains. So we see that Mordechai is going to be in Avelis. He's going to be in mourning. And what's Esther's response? How does Esther respond to Mordechai mourning? So if we look in Perek Dalet, Pasuk Dalet, is Vatavona Naros Esther Vasarisa Vayagidula. So they tell her about what's happened, or Mordechai being there. Vatischalchal Hamalka Ma'od. She was very anguished. She was very upset. Vatislach Begadim Lahabish Es Mordechai Ulahasir Sakam Elav Velo Kibel. So she sends clothes. Get dressed. What are you doing? You're going to be in front of the gate, towards the gate of the king in mourner's clothing? Go get dressed. Be a mensch. Take off your sackcloth. And Mordechai doesn't listen. So it's so strange, right? Her first impulse is to tell Mordechai to get dressed. So again, there's a whole question. Did Esther know about the decree yet or not? But she should have been, what's going on? She should have been more concerned even if she didn't know. But how could it be that she didn't know? Everyone in Shushan, the Psukim described how everyone in Shushan is talking about this decree and the queen herself didn't know. She had informants about a lot of things as we see a lot of in Megillah. She didn't know about it. So Rav Lichtenstein says something which is pretty startling, but Rav Lichtenstein said it, so don't blame it on me, which is source number 17. What eventually drives her to act? Mordechai disturbs her complacency. The entire nation of Israel faces mortal danger, and this she is able to bear. But then she hears that her beloved adoptive father, Mordechai, has removed her regular clothing and is wearing sackcloth instead. Instead of trying to have the royal decree annulled, instead of expressing solidarity with her people, instead of joining Mordechai in protest and mourning, she begs him to stop this nonsense, to accept the decree as it is, and to put on some decent clothing. Esther's response to seeing Mordechai is, I care about Mordechai. I care about him as a person. What's happening right now? What are we going to do? She throws her hands up and says, there's nothing to do. We just got to let it happen. There's nothing we could do. We have no choice. But I could control Mordechai. And Rav Lichtenstein says that even though this is a seemingly coarse, harsh way for this to go down, and it questions what is Esther doing, but this still represents progress from what we saw in Perek Beis. Because in Perek Beis, What was Esther doing? Esther was passive. She didn't seem to care much about anything. But here in the Revelation scene ends, despite everything, this still represents progress. She no longer is completely inactive. Even though she's not caring about the group of Klal Yisrael, they're about to be destroyed. But at least she cares about someone. She cares about Mordechai, and she's willing to take action. And that is the beginning of a process which we did not see in Parak Beis. But Mordechai says, no, 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 no. First he rejects this, and then he says, that's not enough. If we look at and keep the continuation of the description of the Pesukim, in source number 18, Vayagelo Mordechai Esa Sholker Kol Asher Karal. So he tells Esther's messenger in source number 18, page 4, everything that happened, and how the whole story with the silver and that Haman had with Achashverosh, Auginze Hamelech by Yehudim LaAbdom, and how Haman hired Achashverosh to basically say we're able to kill the Jews. And then not only does he tell her everything that happened, Vespashagin Hatzav Hadas. Imagine he took the actual decree. He lifts up the decree, Asher Nitan Beshushan Lahashman Nasan Lo. He gave it to Esther's messenger, Laharos Es Esther. So she should see the decree. Ulahagid La, Ulatsavos Allah, Lovo El Hamelech. Go to the king, you're his wife. Lishani Lo, supplicate on the Jews' behalf. Ulavakish Mlafan of Alama. It's your people at stake. Do something, you're his wife. Do something. Go and beg. Go in front of the king. And Mordechai tries so hard, he literally takes the actual physical decree and puts it in her face and says, look, even if you don't want to believe it's happening. Do something. And he challenges her. Say, care about your people. If you care about your people, go in front of your husband and beg for mercy. Because what else, what other option would you have besides for begging for your people? But how does Esther respond? Esther responds with, no. Perek Dalad, Pasuk Yud Alef. Source number 19. Kol avdei hamelech va'am midinos hamelech yodim. Asher kol ish v'ish asher yavo hamelech al-chatzar apnimis. Asher lo yikarei. Achas daso lahamis levad me'asher yoshit lo hamelech asharvet hazav v'chaya. That everyone knows, all the servants of the kings know, that any person that comes to the courtyard of the king without an invitation gets punished with the penalty of death, unless the king extends the famous golden scepter. Va'ani lo nikrisi lovo al melech zash lo shemyo. And I haven't been called to the king for 30 days. So I'm afraid to do it. I'm afraid to do it. I don't want to do it. I know you're, Mordechai, you're asking me, you're taking out your decree, you're trying to move me to care about my people, to stop being passive and to do something active, but no, I can't. My life is at risk. My life is at risk and you want me to go care about my people? So if you look at the way Rav Lichtenstein describes, Mordechai persists in her appeal to her, telling her in effect, entire of nation of Israel, young and old is in danger. Everyone, this is the appointed date. Go and do something in your position as wife in the royal palace. Shout, appeal, beg, pray. All around swords are being sharpened. Ammunition is being stockpiled. But Esther remains unmoved. She tells Mordechai she cannot approach the king. It is against palace regulations. Such was Esther's response even after the queen was greatly distressed. Even after Mordechai had sent her a copy of the king's decree. Suddenly Esther might be exposed to personal danger. The entire nation of Israel stands on one side of the scale, and she stands alone on the other. What decides the issue? Obviously her own problems. If there's a personal interest and a public interest at stake, what is more likely to prevail? Esther seems to be choosing. We have the whole Jewish people across 127 provinces who we know are going to die, and she has the choice to maybe risk her life, and she says, forget about them. I'm just going to care about myself. And we see Perek Beis Esther written all over this. Esther is not willing to identify with her people and say, I'm going to take a stand. And now we have where the transformation happens, which is Mordechai's only dialogue in the entire Megillah. Two Pesukim. The only two Pesukim you're going to see where Mordechai is actively speaking throughout the Megillah is in Pasuk Yigimel and Pasuk Yadalet. And it is a harsh, harsh criticism of Esther. If you look in source number 21, Vayomer Mordechai l'hashiv el Esther. Al tidami v'nafsheich l'himaleit beis hamelech mikol ha'yudim. Don't think that you are going to escape in the king's house more than all the other Jews. You think you're going to survive. You think you're going to be the one person who's going to make it while you think the rest of the Jews are going to hide. And you're going to hide yourself in the palace. No, it's not going to happen. And what is he accusing Esther of? So if you look at Rav Lichtenstein, source number 22, he accuses Esther of refusing to go to the king, not because she lacks courage, not out of weakness, but rather as a calculated choice. Let the entire Jewish nation be destroyed. Let them all perish, young and old, men and women. I will remain secure in the royal palace. This is how Mordechai interprets her response. And this is what he addresses. Not weakness, not a lack of courage, but rather what he fears may lie behind everything. Behind the apparent timidity lies apathy. Apathy. If you really cared, if you considered your own soul to be at stake, would you be able to say for a whole month I've not been called to the king? Is this how someone talks when she believes that her nation is in danger? Is this the response of someone who cares? He understands that if one knows the situation and if one is truly concerned, then no considerations are admissible and no rules are relevant. Rather, one must be prepared for self-sacrifice, taking care that not personal interests, but rather national interests will dictate one's plans and actions. Do not imagine that you will escape in the royal palace from all the Jews. You're not doing it because you're scared. You're not doing it because you lack courage. It's because you don't care. Because if you cared about the Jewish people and you cared and you felt a part of them and you felt like my nation is at risk, it wouldn't be a choice. You could have the best excuse in the book. It could be that anyone who comes to the king unannounced gets the death sentence and gets their head chopped off. But you would do it anyway because you care about your people. It's like you're at risk. If you're at risk, if your people's at risk, you're at risk. Where's your identification with your nation? Where's your identification with your people? And if that wasn't enough, Mordechai continues in the next pasuk, and he's just...
So it's all very similar, like, to the Argentine with Hitler, the Germans, and Jews going into...
Right.
Going to being Jewish.
Right, exactly. So it sounds like maybe...
Anyway, yeah.
Exactly, exactly. So if we look, if Mordechai is not done, you thought, okay, that's pretty biting. But Pasuk Yadalet, again, Mordechai makes his two psukim of dialogue count. Source 23, page 6. Kim hachareish tacharishi ba'is hazos. Famous Pasuk, if you're silent at this time, revach v'hatzala yamod l'yehudim mimakom acher. The Jewish people, we know that there's something called hashkacha. Hashem is going to take care of them. How, where, I don't know. But Hashem is going to take care of them. Va'at uveis avich tovedu. You and your father's house, you're going to be lost. And then he ends with the line, which for us, the Megillah is written as a story, and it's so obvious to us, but you have to keep in mind, like we spoke about before, this is a couple years process, and connecting the dots between the party and Vashti, and Esther becoming queen, and then Haman taking over, like we read it as a whole story, but it's not clear to the characters in the time, it's a year's process. Mi yodeya im la'ez kazos higat l'malchus. Maybe this is the reason that you became queen in the first place. You're going to remain silent at this time and not care about your people. Okay, you know who that's not going to help? That's not going to help you. The Jewish people are going to be saved. Hashem takes care of the Jewish people. I know that. But who knows? This is your opportunity. Are you going to step up? Are you going to be Esther Parabase? Are you going to be Esther 1, who's just silent and just passive and doesn't take care of anything and just worries about herself? Or are you going to turn into the Esther of Parictes? Are you going to be Esther 2? And Mordechai is challenging her. This right here, this pasuk, Parak Dalet, is Esther's test. If you look at Rav Lichtenstein, he says, someone who avoids any responsibility, who doesn't care, who isn't prepared to risk herself, for sets her personal ambitions over the interests of the nation, is that the person you think will survive? Will she be the one to succeed? Salvation will come. I don't know how or from where, but it will come. Those who pay heed to sundry considerations and circumstances, the doubters and cowards of many times, those who put themselves first, all of those will perish. Now is zero hour. This is the test. This is also the turning point. Mordechai directs this terrible accusation at the doubtful, hesitating, fearful Esther. pushing her to the wall and demanding that she stop fabricating excuses and abandon her rationalization. He demands that she looks deep into her soul and see what lies behind her hesitation. She must not try to deceive either Mordechai, herself, or God. If she undertakes such an unflinching appraisal, she will see that what lies behind all her excuses is apathy. The excuses fall away. Mordechai rejects one by one all of her claims and considerations. Morally laid bare, Esther must make her faithful choice. Do I care or don't I? Am I going to associate myself with my people? Am I going to have a national identification? Am I going to put myself at risk for the sake of my people? Am I going to be active and overcome apathy and passivity? Or am I not? Am I just going to try and hide and hope my luck, you know, continues to run out and that Ahasuerus keeps taking care of me? But Mordechai says, don't be so naive. Remember who we're dealing with. We're not dealing with the Shekinah. We're dealing with Hashem. Hashem is going to take care of his people. And you and your father's house, if you have apathy and you don't have courageousness, you're the ones going down, not the Jewish people. And the question is, how does Esther respond? And if you look, this pasuk is obviously very famous. Parak Dalad, Psukim Tesvav through Tesayin. Vatomer Esther Lahashiv El Mordechai. Esther sends back a message to Mordechai. Lech, again, throughout the pasuk, keep in mind, Esther has been mispassive. And all of a sudden, command after command after command. Lech, go, gnos, gather. As kol ha-yehudim ha-nimtzi b'shushan. Gather all the Jews. Vitsumo alai, fast, vialtochlu, vialtishtu, shloshes yamim, laila v'yom. Don't eat, don't drink for 3 days. She's ordering command right, she's ordering command left. Vigam ani v'narotzai atsum kain. And also I and my maidservants are also going to fast. She puts herself as part of her people. I'm also in this. I have a skin in the game. I'm going to be in it. Uvechein avo el hamelech. I'll go to the king, asher lo kadas, even though I'm not supposed to. Vakasher avadati avadati. And if I perish, I perish. But I'm going to take that chance. I'm going to listen to Mordechai's encouragement, and I'm going to pass the test. And if you look at Rav Lichtenstein, source number 26, it is now that the young, passive, powerless Esther faces her moment of truth, and she prevails. She passes the test. It is now that she rises to her full stature and reveals herself not just in title, but in essence as a queen. This Esther understands that her fate and destiny are not a private, personal matter, but rather bound up with those of a nation as a whole. And when the danger and the mission are public, then the course of action too will of necessity be a public one. Go and gather all the Jews. And we have seen now that Esther has really done a complete 180, and how Esther goes from being Parak Beis, being passive, being acted upon, to being the initiator, to being the one who is able in Parak Tes, to be the one who's ordering and remember me, Lidoros, and save my people, and through this dialogue of Mordechai in Parak Dal. But we also have to now know that Mordechai's role up until now also does a complete 180. And that's what we're going to finish up the share with, which is, if you look, what is Mordechai's response to all of Esther's commands in the previous pasuk? Vayavor Mordechai, vayas kechol asher tzivtsa alav Esther. And it makes you think about that earlier pasuk, how Esther did everything that Mordechai had commanded, and now the tables are flipped. Esther has become the main hero. Esther has become the protagonist, and now Mordechai is playing a secondary role. He's not passive. We're going to see Mordechai in the rest of the story is doing lots of active things, but it is clearly Esther's world, Esther's show, and Mordechai is a secondary character. Mordechai is helping him. And if you look at the way the Rav describes it in source page 7, source number 28, at this juncture, Esther takes over. She is the mistress, Mordechai the follower. She issues orders, gives instructions. Mordechai is a subordinate, submissive, and obedient. He performs the errands for her. The very moment Esther said that she was ready to go to the king, ready to face torture and death, the spotlight shifted from him to her. And that is also, just finishing up Esther too for a second, that is part of the completion of Esther's character growth. It's not only enough that she's willing to go in front of Ahasuerus, she's now willing to go to Mordechai and say, do this, do that. right? That's part of her story from transitioning from Perek Beis to Perek Tes. She has to be able to tell her father, the one who raised her and cultivated values within her, this is the way that we are going to move forward. And similarly, if you look at the Medrash, and there's other instances of it, we won't read it inside, that Esther tells Mordechai that we have to fast. But you know when it was on the calendar year? It was going to be the night of the Seder. It was Pesach time. And that's when Esther wanted the Jews to fast for 3 days. And Mordechai turns to Esther and says, but the third day, that's Pesach. We can't do that. And she just turns back to Mordechai and says, you're the head of the Sanhedrin. What carbon Pesach is there going to be if we don't have Jewish people? And Mordechai says, you're right. I'm going to do everything that you just said. And we see that Esther has now been able to command Mordechai. And Mordechai listens to her. And it is a part of Esther's growth, but it is now also a part of Mordechai's growth. That Mordechai has gone from being the lead, the person who is the influencer, the teacher, to being in a secondary sidekick role. And if we look in source number 30, the Rav has a brilliant point. What was Mordechai's request of Esther? Mordechai told Esther, go and beg in front of the king. But is that what happens right away? That's not what happens right away, right? What happens right away is first Esther goes to the king and mentions absolutely nothing about the decree. Mentions absolutely nothing about the Jewish people. What does she say? Come with Haman to a party. And then at the first party, come to another party. And then finally she accuses Haman, and only after Haman's out of the picture, then we have Esther begging to overturn the rest of the decree against the Jewish people. But this is not Mordechai's decree. This is not Mordechai's plan. The Rav points out, if we glance through the Megillah once again, we will notice that there was a disagreement between Mordechai and Esther concerning the proper course of action. Mordechai held the view that immediate, spontaneous action on the part of Esther is inevitable. Esther should appear before the king, taking the risk of being rejected and executed, and plead with him hysterically to spare her people. Esther did not concur with Mordechai. She went to the king. However, all that she did consisted in extending an invitation to the king to attend a banquet in his honor. Not a single word was spoken about the decree. Not a single word was mentioned about the tragic fate of her people. Moreover, she ignored the whole issue even at the banquet. She was procrastinating. And then the Rav continues to develop what was Esther's plan, which we're not going to get into tonight. But either way, the point is that who is the one who's changing up the plan? This was originally Mordechai's plan, and Esther's saying, no, this is my plan. We're going to do, you want me to go to the king? I'll go to the king, but I'm going to do this my way. And that is a change that happens, and is really oftentimes the way that Mesorah works. It's building off what the previous generation and the previous Rabbanim said, and sometimes taking your nofech mishalo, your own individual characteristics, and being able to make that into a conglomerate, which is not, it's more than a whole that's more than the sum of its parts, right? It's being Esther saying, okay, I'm going to listen to you, Mordechai. I'm going to take those values that you told me and take your message and take everything that you just said, but I'm going to do this my way. And she calls an audible to the plan. And if we track Mordechai's story through the rest of the Megillah, again, I'll just give you a couple of the highlights. Mordechai is barely mentioned through the next three prak. I mean, he's not at the party. He's not invited to any of the parties. We get a message that he doesn't stand up for Haman. Haman says that everything is meaningless if Mordechai doesn't stand up. These are all descriptions about Mordechai, right? Haman decides to build a gallows for Mordechai. He's mentioned that Mordechai never got a reward. Haman takes Mordechai on the horse. So obviously Mordechai is part of the story, but again, it's a passive part of the story. So the king wanted to honor Mordechai, so we're going to take him on a horse. Mordechai returns to the gate of the king, but we're not getting much at the story. Mordechai's not at the second party. He's barely mentioned. Haman gets hung on the gallows. So Perek Hey, Perek Vav, Perek Zion, we get very, very little description of Mordechai. Because Mordechai is no longer the lead actor. Esther is now the lead actor. And finally, with this we'll close, in Perek Ches, Perek Yud, we do get some more prominence of Mordechai, but only in the footsteps of Esther. Things have totally flipped. If you look at source number 31, Bayom Ahu, Nasan Hamelech Achashverosh LeEsther Hamalka, Es Beis Haman Sorer HaYehudim. So Esther, Achashverosh gives not to Mordechai, he gives to Esther, the house of Haman. Mordechai Ba Lefnei Hamelech, Mordechai comes in front of the king. What enables Mordechai to come in front of the king and get this exalted position? Ki Higida Esther Mahula. Because Esther told Ahasuerus about her relationship with Mordechai, what Mordechai meant to her. And that's what enables Mordechai to get this prominent position. Vayaser hamelech estabato. Only then the king takes off his ring, asher hever mi Haman, that he took from Haman, vayitna lemordechai. Vatasam Esther's Mordechai al beis Haman. As Mordechai is going to be doing a lot of decreeing, a lot of being involved, a lot of being dressed in royalty, but why? Is because of what Mordechai did? Rather, it is because of his association with Esther. Esther is the reason that he gets the ring, he's the way that he gets over Haman's estate. And Mordechai now has completely gone full circle. Instead of Mordechai being the prominent figure who Esther's playing tag along, Esther has now become the protagonist, has become our main hero, our person who we are going to name the Megillah after, her story and her personal growth. And Mordechai now, who was originally bold, courageous, he's the Rosh Sanhedrin, he's a prominent person, but he's going to have to take a step back for the story and play second fiddle to Esther. And I think that's often, you know, the role of a parent. Mordechai could help educate, he could help inculcate values, he could allow Esther to be the person that she's going to be. He could give her encouragement at the most important time in her life, that crucial time when she needs it the most. But at some point, when she reaches her independence, he has to take a step back. And oftentimes, I've Baruch Hashem blessed with amazing parents who were amazing at this, and sense when you become more independent, but to give children our independence. And that is a message that we learn from Mordechai. And we can be there, and it's important to be there at the young stages and to help them grow to be the people that they are. But at some point, even at the crisis, you're there. You help them get through it, and they get to the chance of being adulthood, of being independent. And being there for them when they need it, and you're going to be taking orders, and you're going to making sure to assemble the people, and you're going to help them in any way that you can. But this is now Esther's life, and she is the one who is the queen. She was the one who was chosen to the Jews, and now it's ultimately Mordechai's role is to take a step back, to be there when he needs to, and that is the way that we have flipped. We've gone full circle. We've gone from Esther 1 in Perek Beis, from being passive to being timid to being shy to being the queen of 127 provinces who saves the Jewish people, and Mordechai, who goes from being the lead actor, the person who everyone's going to listen to what he's going to do, to taking a step back.